Vinitaya-gyaru-purvandama-mushamata Shobham-sutasya-natu-tat-taramushamati Yajjimvato-syabhandane-bhuvanani-gopi Samiksha-sankhita-manapati-bodhitasi.
When the cowherd woman, Krishna's forced mother, Yasoda, was trying to tie the hands of her son with ropes, she found the rope to be always insufficient in length. And when she finally gave up, Lord Krishna by and by opened his mouth, wherein the mother found all the universes situated. Seeing this, she was doubtful in her mind, but she was convinced in a different manner of the mystic nature of her son. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthai Vidaya Srimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deva Deva Bhagavani Vishnane Nirvi Shesha Srinivadi Paskatiya Deva Siddhane. In this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the different incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are being reviewed. And of course we know the Srimad Bhagavatam ultimately says Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Ete Chamsa Kalapumsam Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Ridyanti Geyuge. That this is called the Pratibhasha Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam is to give us principally an appreciation for Krishna, his name, his form, his quality, and his pastimes. But in order to do that, one has to be raised up to a level where one can understand Krishna. That's called tattva, the actual tattva about Krishna, his janma, and his karma. That Krishna doesn't take birth like an ordinary living entity. That his birth, his divyam, is divine, as his activities are also. That here in the material world, we take birth according to our previous karma, and therefore we get a certain body according to our previous karma, and we're destined to experience different things here in the material world according to our previous karma. But Krishna comes, he comes for lila, for transcendental pleasure. He comes in a body which is Atma Maya, which is made out of the internal energy. So here is something about the internal energy is also explained, that the material internal energy acts in a way, or I don't know if I said internal energy, but that's what I meant. Krishna comes in a body which is made out of the internal energy of his body is completely spiritual, Satchitananda. And something about the internal energy is explained here. Now, of course, according to our advance in spiritual life, we'll have different degrees of realization of what that internal energy is. Our being practicing Krishna consciousness, the principal reason we're practicing Krishna consciousness is to somehow or another enter into that platform, the level of consciousness, where we can actually experience the internal energy of Krishna. Because the internal energy of Krishna is the very essence of what everyone is seeking, namely eternal, ever-increasing awareness and complete happiness. Here in the material world, if we become aware of something, it doesn't always produce happiness. So sometimes we don't want to become aware of things. Just like in the material world, people want happiness, and so they engage in different types of activities of sense gratification. For instance, they may drink alcohol for happiness and getting the taste, whatever rasa they get from that alcohol. Then they experience some temporary cessation of misery or some temporary feeling of being happy or free from carefree. But then the result is that they have to experience some misery, generally known in the material world as a hangover. And in order to become free from that hangover, because they didn't drink alcohol in order to get a hangover. They drank alcohol in order to enjoy happiness, but the result is that they're also experiencing some misery. The plan, therefore, is to take some kind of medicine, drug, whatever. Sometimes they'll take aspirin. I'm not so familiar with it, but they must take something in order to get rid, free from the hangover. Maybe they drink coffee or something, I don't know. What's that? Coffee? Excuse me? They drink more alcohol. That's in Poland they do that.
I don't have experience.
Well, I know in Poland I've seen on the street. Go in the morning and not only in Poland, you can go to New York City also in Bowery, see the same thing, but there are different classes of persons who drink. It is said that when Balaram became intoxicated, he went to sleep. So those who are more elevated, they after getting drunk, they go to sleep. Those who are less elevated, they start singing, screaming out loud. So there are different classes of persons who get intoxicated. And I'm sure there are different persons who find different remedies for the results of their intoxication. Everything has three modes: goodness, passion, ignorance. But the remedies are simply usually to cover over the effect. The effect is still there, but it's covered over. In other words, we become less conscious of that particular part. So the idea is that what is that position where you can be happy, and not only unlimitedly happy, but also conscious? Here in the material world, happiness generally means to become less conscious, because the material world generally means pain. Therefore, the less conscious we become of our body, the more we become free from pain. Otherwise, why will people take heroin? Generally, heroin means, for instance, you become less conscious. Most of the intoxications means either become less conscious in some way, to go beyond the bodily level of consciousness. So we're also seeking that, going beyond the bodily or mental level of consciousness to a higher platform of consciousness. But there is a platform of consciousness that one can come to, which doesn't mean that one has to also get a level, an effect, a reaction for coming to that level. So that's the internal energy, where one can become more and more aware and more happy, and one doesn't have to get any reaction. That the internal level of consciousness, internal potency, is the actual platform of real, true happiness. And here we find that Mother DeSoto is on that internal level of consciousness, and it has a certain effect. The effect is illusory. Although Krishna, Mother DeSoto was trying very hard to tie up Krishna, not out of any kind of envy or maliciousness towards Krishna, but because the Vedic culture did not believe in Dr. Spock. Spoil the rod, spare the rod and spoil the child. This is the modern philosophy that just leave the kid to himself and he'll turn out to be a perfect citizen. He'll know exactly what to do. That may be true for an incarnation of God. But even the incarnations of God were not treated in that way. One time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did something naughty. So Jagannath Misra chastised him. And that night, one Brahmin came in a dream to Jagannath Misra and said, "There's no need for you to chastise Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he's a self-effulgent personality. He's a self-realized personality. Why should you chastise him?" But Jagannath Misra said, "Even he being Narayan himself, it wouldn't matter. It is the job, it is the duty of a father to train up his son." And the Brahmin started to argue, "But that may be true for an ordinary son, but your son is Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is the need?" So Jagannath Misra protested, "It doesn't really matter who my son is. Even if he be Narayan or whoever he is, some demigod, still I must train him up, otherwise how will he learn?" So the whole night went on with this argument in Jagannath Mishra's dream, and finally the Brahman became very satisfied and left very happy, seeing the parental rasa that Jagannath Mishra was displaying in that dream. Therefore we can see that according to the Veda culture, even one being Narayan himself, it is the duty of the father and the mother to train up the child. That there is different level, there's different ways of learning. One of the ways of learning is called Shastra. Shastra means scriptural injunctions. That is generally taken as the way of hearing. That we hear the knowledge and we understand it, we accept it, and we follow it. But the common person will not simply be able to hear, understand, accept, and follow. Because they don't know how to hear, nor are they interested in hearing. Just like a child, how much a child is really interested in hearing the Vedas? You can tell a child about some story of, just like yesterday we were reading Ramayana, and Rudai Chaitanya mentioned that the children, they like to hear about Kumbhakarna, about the elephants running up and down his body. It's attractive to them. Did you ever hear that story? Yeah. Did you ever hear the story, Nandi, about Kumbhakarna? Did you like the story? Yes. So it's very attractive to hear about big, big demons, or so big that elephants have to run up and down his body in order to wake him up. So, but generally speaking, people are not, they won't believe in these things. First of all, they have no experience of such a big person. There's one devotee here who's 7 feet tall. That's probably the biggest experience we have, the biggest thing that we know. Maybe the elephant in Mayapur is the biggest thing we know. So to believe that there was someone who was so big, the big elephants could run up and down his body, it's beyond our experience. And generally we take our experience, that's how we understand things, is through our experience. So if we have no experience, then how can we believe in something? I mean, actually believe in it. We can accept it to some extent, but to actually firmly be convinced about it, it's very difficult. We have to have some experience. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita begins with trying to give us some information that we're not the body. Prabhupada one time called a little child who was giving a class in a school, and he asked, who is the most intelligent child in the class? And of course no one wanted to step forward, but they put forward one little boy, and they said, he's the most intelligent. So Prabhupada said, can you point to your nose? So the boy became very disturbed. What do you mean? Can I point to my nose? Of course I can point to my nose. So Prabhupada said, point to your nose. So the boy pointed to his nose and to his ear. Can you point to your other ear? Can you point to your leg? So the boy was becoming a little incredulous, they would say. He was becoming, what are you asking me? You know, I'm so intelligent. Why are you asking me these stupid questions? What? Can I point to my nose and ear? So then Prabhupada finally said, can you point to yourself? And then the boy became completely confused. He couldn't figure out where he was. So this is an interesting experiment you can do with even adults. Of course, adults, they're so completely confused that they'll point, here I am, I'm right here. Where? Are you the arm? Are you the leg? No, we don't say I leg. They say my leg. So who is the person who's claiming it to be his leg or her leg? Where is that person? So at least the boy became confused because he was more intelligent than most people nowadays who aren't confused at all. They're completely convinced about the wrong thing. But the Bhagavad Gita begins with trying to give us an information that the body is changing constantly, but the person who's aware of the body is always the same. Just for the common person, this is very difficult to understand, although he's seemingly more educated, but actually he's been educated to become more of a fool. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, everyone is born a fool, and then by mana education one becomes less than an ass. Therefore, a child, although the child will not be able to very easily understand the Vedic knowledge, but they probably have even a better chance of doing so than even a so-called educated person in the modern world. At least they can more easily understand the difference between themselves and their body. Just like a girl named Vishaka, when she was 10 years old, she jumped into a pool, into a lake in Auckland, in New Zealand. But the lake, she hit a rock or something, she hit her neck, and she became paralyzed from her neck down. So when she was in the hospital, you know, there were all these doctors and the nurses were all lamenting. She said, why are you so lamenting? She said, I'm not this body. What are you on this bodily platform for? So even a child can usually understand better than a so-called educated person. So Shastra means to be able to hear, understand, and then accept, and then to follow, to actually get the realization. But who's on that platform? We can't hear, and even if we heard, we wouldn't understand, and even if we come to the level of understanding somewhat, then we wouldn't accept. It's hard enough to accept, to understand, to hear that we're not this body, to understand it, to accept it, and then to act on it. There are progressively higher and higher levels of actual realization. So that's the most elementary aspect of our philosophy, and even that is way beyond the conception of most people. Therefore, not only there's Shastra, but there's Shastra. If people want to do the right thing by hearing, then they can be directed to do the right thing by force, for their own benefit and for the benefit of others. Just like in modern society, generally speaking, they have to apply so much force in order to get people to do even the most elementary things correctly. Now that force may be generated by simply brainwashing people. Modern education, television, theater, movies, videos, internet, is all meant to brainwash people, to control them, so they don't get completely out of hand. As one, the devotees knew one prime minister of New Zealand. New Zealand's a very small country, so that prime minister was a former lawyer of the devotees. So the devotees knew him quite well. So they were talking with him, and he said, yes, modern sports is more or less simply as a diversion for people to divert their minds from all their problems so they can forget about it and they don't cause so much trouble. So modern education, modern propaganda, modern mass media is simply to distract people from their real problems of life so they don't cause too much trouble. Get them to take intoxication, make illicit sex available, so that they don't actually find out or figure out what's actually going on, how they're being exploited by a small class of people. And if that doesn't work, then they have police forces, they have the armies, they have the secret agents everywhere in order to control people. So although so-called freedom, but people are free to get control in a certain way, that's all. So that's called shastra, force. If you can't direct people by hearing, then you direct them by force. So children, or nowadays everyone practically speaking, they can't really understand so easily by shastra, therefore there's shastra. There has to be some kind of force. So Mother Jasoda, she wants to restrain her naughty child by force, by tying him up with ropes. Nowadays, he probably would have been, you know, someone would have called, if they would have seen this, they would have called the police, Mother Jasoda would have been arrested, put into jail, and Krishna would have been sent to a foster home. You know, we saw it, you know, Krishna was crying, And Mother Jasoda was trying to tie him with ropes. Luckily, you know, she couldn't tie a rope properly, so she was too angry with Krishna. Therefore, luckily, Krishna never really got tied up till the end, you know. And then Krishna opened up, and Mother Jasoda, because she was probably intoxicated, she claims that in his mouth she saw so many things. But here we find that Mother Jasoda looked into Krishna's mouth, and he's actually God. So naturally within his mouth was something extraordinary. There Krishna is explaining the universal form. All the planets, all the different time and space, the demigods, the demons, past, present, and future, everything was there in Krishna's mouth. And also, she saw herself with Krishna sitting on her lap. And she saw the dirt that Krishna supposedly didn't eat. Everything was there. But she didn't take it very seriously. Although she saw it all, but she didn't take it very seriously. She just put it into some perspective. It didn't interfere with her parental rasa. So we may find that quite extraordinary. But we can appreciate it if we think about our own pastimes in this material world, whatever it is, our own activities. That here, we can sit in Bhagavatam class, for instance, or Bhagavad Gita class, and constantly hear about we're not this body. And we can even understand it, or accept it, or even try and act according to it, but generally we don't take it very seriously. Because it interferes with our ras in the material world, the sense gratification. Therefore, because it interferes with our general rasa that we're interested in, therefore we don't take it very seriously. Although we understand it, but we don't really accept it very deeply. So certainly Mother Jasoda, knowing Krishna was God, she kind of understood it, but she didn't accept it very seriously, because it would have interfered with her rasa. So we can understand that the main factor in the spiritual world, just like the main factor here in the material world, is sense gratification, and we don't really take seriously anything that interferes with that rasa. So similarly in the spiritual world, the main activity is service to Krishna, and people don't take seriously anything that interferes with that rasa. That the primary rasa is dasya rasa, or service to Krishna. So Krishna may be God, he may not be God, whoever he is, we don't really care. We simply want to see him happy, that's all. That's our primary interest in life, whoever he is. Simply we love him, and therefore we want to see that he's satisfied. So I'll stop there, thank you. Are there any questions? Yeah, it's not really rasa. Because we don't want to. Well, we don't. We're not just suffering. We think we're enjoying. Because there's different types of suffering. Some suffering is less than others, and we find that more enjoyable. The less we suffer, the more we find enjoyment. So that difference between suffering more and suffering less, we find enjoyable. But we don't know that because we don't know what real happiness is. Therefore, we accept this temporary suffering and less suffering as being happiness. In other words, the agitation of the senses trying to come in contact with their objects is suffering. And the end result is more suffering. But in between that, when the senses are actually in contact with their objects, and we're not either lamenting or hankering, we find that enjoyable. That's the nature of the material world. But we've been here for so long, and behind that whole idea is that I'm actually the enjoyer. So although I'm actually the sufferer, but still I for a moment I feel like I'm the enjoyer. We feel that's worth everything. Because that's why we came to the material world in the first place. That was our mission. We all came here as the avatars. Although actually we're not the Krishna avatar, we're the Mudha avatar. But still we're taking pleasure thinking ourselves the avatars here. Well, there's a process. We should learn the process. So the process means, first of all, try and hear, and try to understand, then try to understand what it means practically, and try to apply it practically, and then try to, and that's a continuous process. And if we apply it practically, then the result should be illumination. So, humble inquiry, trying to understand things clearly, and then when things are understood clearly, then act according to what we've understood clearly, and the result is that we should understand things and actually experience things properly. Automatically? It's not exactly automatically. By the grace of Krishna, when he sees that we're actually trying sincerely to follow the whole process, not just the process that I've heard, I've understood, and but I don't like what I've understood, so I'm not going to follow. But still, I should get some credit for hearing. We may get some credit, but we won't get the full credit. If we want to get the full credit, we have to go through the full process. And not only hearing submissively, trying to understand, and then applying it practically. Then if we do the whole process, then Krishna says, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. But how consistently and how enthusiastically we engage in Krishna's service, then Krishna reciprocates by giving us the intelligence how to more consistently and more enthusiastically engage in devotional service. So if that's our objective, is to become completely consistent and completely happy in devotional service, and Krishna will continuously give us intelligence how to do it. And if our objective is to utilize devotional service for some material end, then there will always be a dead end to our devotional service. Because Krishna will give us the intelligence or the facility by which we can get to the dead end. We can get our material objectives fulfilled. But then there won't be very much progress in actual devotional service. Yes. Yeah, of course it's gradual. What do you expect? First of all, we don't follow so strictly. If we followed completely strictly, 100%, then it would be very fast progress. But we can try and follow as strictly as we can. Then there will be gradual progress. But following strictly means 24 hours a day simply to meditate upon Krishna and to utilize completely our body, mind, and words in every moment in Krishna's service. Can you do that? Well, do you do it 5 minutes a day? So, for one moment during the day? Half a moment, nimesha. So we can work our way up to one moment a day. And that's gradual progress. Wherever we're at, we just try and double it every day. It may not be very elevated, but if we look around thinking, well, someone's 3 times more than I am, they're 5 times more, it's not even worthwhile. I'm already behind. I can't catch up. So if we think it's a contest against everyone else, and they're winning and I'm losing, and no, it's just simply for our benefit. So wherever we actually are at, if we can increase that even a slight bit, then that's our eternal benefit.
So it's not that we can't, it's just that we won't.
Well, if we're here trying, then we will. And if we're not here trying, then we won't, because we're not making any effort. Because we can be right in front of the deities, we can be here, and we can think, well, you know, there he is, there's God. Why is he up there? Why is he always up there smiling? You know, he's watching, and my mind's going all over the universe, doing all kinds of things, and he's smiling. Maybe he's laughing at me. So we can think of all kinds of things, you know. Or, you know, I feel bad, you know. Maybe he's actually, you know, who knows? Now he sees me. Now he knows all about me. Who knows what kind of reaction I'm going to get for being here? If I wasn't here, maybe he wouldn't bother with me. But now I'm right in front of him and he sees everything I'm going through. And who knows what he's going to do to me now? So we can think of all kinds of, you know, different mental speculations. So we not only have to be here, but we have to be here in Krishna consciousness. So we have to understand things properly, You have to understand Krishna, why he came here as the deity. It wasn't that, you know, Radha Desh, you know, he heard how nice the prasadam is here, so he decided to come here. And he's making a living blowing on his flutes, you know, just to keep the prasadam coming. No, Krishna came here as the deity form for a certain reason, and we have these different services for a reason. And so we should try and understand these things and then participate, learn how to participate. If we go before the deity and simply cry, "Oh, Krishna, see how miserable I am, please make me happy, you know, and here's my shopping list, and that will make me very happy. You just, you know, send me whatever you can." Or if we understand that actually if we simply come to the platform of Krishna consciousness and dance and chant happily, then Krishna will make us even more happy while we're dancing and chanting. That we may be happy dancing and chanting, but if we do it in love of Krishna, then Krishna will even become happier. So we have to understand, think properly, and then we'll be able to understand how to properly engage in service. Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Lord Sanatana Ki Jai.